This is Food for Thought. Call Carol at 866-823-1077. And now, it's Food for Thought.
Welcome back to the second hour of Food for Thought with Carol. And joining me is Jeannie Lester. We're on 107.7 WTPL in the Concord, Manchester, and Lakes region, as well as streaming all around the world on WTPLFM.com, which is powered by the Granite State Dairy Promotion. Anytime during the show, you can give us a call, 866-823-1077. We'd love to hear from you. We'd also love for you to like us on Facebook, Food for Thought with Carol. And to remind you that we are live at the Beacon Building in downtown Manchester, 814 Elm Street. And that was really interesting with Jeff Reardon. I love that.
Isn't that neat? Yeah. There's just so much there.
There is.
And so many ways to use those skills and talents.
Yes.
Yep. And
yes.
We were talking, of course, about Toastmasters and working on those skills as far as presenting yourself without saying ums and ands and all of those things.
Right. And just and how important it is in all aspects of your
yes.
life. You know?
See,
Jeff is probably listening.
Okay,
he's laughing
right now. Oh, yeah, could be.
He's listening. I'm sure he's giggling.
Sorry,
right now.
Jeff.
I can just see
him.
But that's okay. So, without any further ado, let's welcome Bert Bingle of Bert's Better Beers.
Well, thank you for having me today.
Yes, we're very, very anxious to talk to you. Excited. So, let us know a little bit about Bert's Better Beers.
Well, Bert's Better Beers is a specialty beer shop, and we're in Hooksett, New Hampshire. We carry a very large line of craft beer, local beer, imported beers, meads and ciders.
Meads also?
Meads, yes.
Oh, meads, mm-hmm. M-E-A-D-S.
That's correct.
Now, when you refer to meads, mm-hmm. what exactly is meads?
Well, mead is technically a wine, but okay. it's made primarily with honey instead of grape as the fermentable. So it's very, very sweet, and it certainly as flavorful as any grape wine.
I did not know that.
It's also the world's oldest fermented beverage.
Wow.
Yeah, it brings to mind that medieval kind of time. And
Vikings and horns and that kind of thing.
Yes.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. That does. So now, clearly, I'm kind of stuck now because I'm on meads, but mm-hmm. we when we talk about Bert's Better Beers, mm-hmm. beer is such a hot trend now. And it's not just the beer, as we've said before, you watch any TV show, the person walks in and says, give me a beer. No, that can't happen because you have so many different types of beer. And within that, not only are there different flavors and flavor blends, but you've got lager, you've got ale, mm-hmm. you've got all of these things. It is not a simple thing. It's a nice thing. You can be very adventurous. But can you tell us a little bit, maybe some of the background of beer and then what the differences are between ales and lagers, those kinds of things?
Well, you know, beer is, of course, next to mead, one of the oldest fermented beverages. And, you can trace its roots all the way back to Mesopotamia and the Sumerians. Matter of fact, the pyramids were built on beer. That's pretty much what the people drank. It was more like a slurry then, and it was more like a food-based item as far as that goes. And then, throughout history, there's been a lot of fermented and beverages as far as that goes that they called beer. And particularly in the Middle Ages and such, they would have to drink these beverages because they couldn't drink water. If you drank the water, you got sick.
Right.
But if you drank these beverages that you made, for some reason, they were better. And the reason it was because during the fermentation process, there's some natural going on where it kills the bacteria. So it becomes, safe to drink. And back then, beers, of course, were only like maybe 1 or 2% alcohol. And everybody drank beer. Even kids drank beer back then because it was clean. It was safe to drink. But, it wasn't really a high alcohol beverage. Wines were more of the high alcohol beverages. And then you come into modern times, and now there's just, beer has become a social beverage, a beverage of choice. as far as people going out and enjoying a meal or a social event, that kind of thing. And there are many, many different styles of beer. I mean, we could go into all kinds of different sub-levels, but, you know, under the broad category of beer, pretty much you have two things that they fall under: ales and lagers.
Okay.
Now, those are primarily how they're made. Now, and beer is always made with water, yeast, malt, and hops. But it's the differences in how it's processed that makes it, whether it's an ale or a lager. And primarily it has to do with the type of yeast that you use. An ale yeast ferments at a higher temperature, let's, you know, say about 50, 55 degrees Fahrenheit. That's where the yeast, which is a little animal, and it consumes the sugars and makes the alcohol. So the little yeasties, and they're like 50 degrees, and they work very quickly, and they can make a fermentation process in about 10 days. So the beers can be made rather quickly. Lagers, though, the lager yeasts, they ferment at a very low temperature, sometimes right around freezing.
Wow.
So it takes a lot longer for that fermentation process to happen. So, you know, good lagers can take 3-4 months to make. And you can taste that, you know, in the difference between an ale and lager. Some ales will have a more bready, full-bodied taste to it, and then lagers, a more crisper, cleaner taste to it. And then there are subcategories that come out from there.
Now, what about dark beer versus lighter beer? Like, what category would the dark beer go under, for instance?
Well, dark beers are, you know, stouts, porters, brown ales, that kind of thing. And, you know, light beers, you know, pilsners, pale ales, you know, lagers. And the difference is the type of malt that is used. You know, and malt is essentially a cereal. It's a grain. And what they do is they dry it. And because it's a sugar, when they dry it, they heat it up. And as you heat sugar, you know, it caramelizes. So, and when you caramelize, it gets darker. So as you more caramelize the grains, the darker the beer. Now, in stouts, they're black. Those grains have been almost burnt. And that lends that black color, a little bit of coffee notes, some bitterness to it.
So like a Guinness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Guinness would be a stout.
All right. Mm-hmm. Do you like Guinness?
I don't. I don't tend to like the stronger, the darker. I'm a real kind of a fruity light, you know.
You know what, though? I tend to like the fruity ones, too.
Yeah.
But Guinness really isn't that heavy tasting. I like it. I like that when you do the black and tan.
Yes.
I do enjoy that.
It is a misconception. Everybody thinks that Guinness is a very big,
exactly,
dark, strong beer. It's actually not. It's Guinness is a dark beer, to be sure, and it's got the dark coffee flavors, the roasted flavors, but it's typically only about 4.75% alcohol. So it's actually less than a lot of American light lagers.
Okay, and so taste-wise, it's not what you would envision when you look at it, because, yes, I tend to look at the darker ones and think, oh, that's going to be heavy, I need a spoon to...
No.
And it's going to be bitter.
Not in all cases, but there are stouts that you stick a spoon in and it'll stay.
And it'll stay, yeah.
Yes.
We're talking with Bert Bingle of Bert's Better Beers, and let's talk maybe a little bit about the things that you've brought for us today.
Well, what I did is I did bring some selections from the shop. One of the things that we pride ourselves at Bert's Better Beers is we're very New Hampshire-centric as far as that goes. If it's a New Hampshire product and if they put it in a bottle or a can, I want to have it on the shelves at the shop.
That's great.
And I brought some things along with this. Matter of fact, we're gonna start off with the stout.
Oh, okay.
So all the product that I brought today is all made in New Hampshire. Right now, we're going to be sampling Millie's Oatmeal Stouts. We got a little Manchester going on here, and this beer won the World Beer Cup Award.
Wow,
World
yes,
Beer Cup.
That's huge.
About 10 years ago, but it's still a huge thing.
Yeah.
And we're going to open this now.
Okay, I think that's a big accomplishment.
Now you notice that sounded like a can.
Yeah.
Yes, because it is. Cans are a huge trend right now. Can technology has changed so much. It's not your grandfather's can where it tasted like aluminum. They've really got it down to the point where
Thank
they've
you.
Got that technology where you don't can't really tell the difference between the canned product and a bottle product or a draft product.
Interesting.
Now this is an oatmeal stout. Now you can see it's nice and dark, good color to it. The head is nice tan to it.
Mm-hmm.
The aroma.
It does smell nice.
Nice now, roasty kind of coffee. But he also uses oatmeal in it. It's the type of stout where oatmeal, of course, has got sugars in it. And in the brewing process, they add the oatmeal, and the heat extracts the sugars and sweetens the beer a little bit more, takes some of the edge off some of the darker aspects of the stout. Can make for a very nice sweet beer.
So it's interesting, as you sip it, the first little sip is, it's like a mellow and it's smooth. Mm-hmm. But the part that gets me is that same feeling I have with some of the other dark beers, is that the after, it's a little, for me, it's a stronger taste.
Yes, you're getting a little bit of an acrid finish to it, and that's, you know, pretty much what goes on with stouts. You're going to get a little bit of that acrid finish to it. That's very typical of the style.
But it is a very smooth, I mean, it's a dark color. But it's a smooth flavor as you're sipping.
I think it's delicious. It's really good.
Yeah, and you can do a number of things. I mean, people use stouts as a base for soups, stews. For example. What we like to do sometimes, particularly with stouts in the summertime, is we'll drop a small melon ball scoop ice cream in it and make a float.
Really? Ooh, a beer float.
Yep.
That's
cool.
Interesting.
Yeah. We have an ice cream social every year, and we do a lot of mixing and pairings with ice cream and beer, and people are amazed. They're like, I didn't know this would work like that.
Right. Yeah, that's a very different thing to do. Absolutely.
Yes,
now, when you were both talking about cooking with stout and to adding that with stews, do you really need to know a lot about what you're doing, or can you just add some to your stew and it's just going to be great?
Well, you just
add a lot of.
Nope, you just add it as a liquid ingredient to your recipe, and it certainly, it's going to make it darker. It's going to make it thicker. You know, it's going to add
more
flavorful to it.
Yeah.
Nice. We see a lot of people that come in and they just want to buy one bottle of Guinness, and I say, "Oh, you're making stew, huh?"
Ah, okay, all right.
And you can do that at Burt's Better Beers.
That's correct. You can't make the stew. You can buy the beer.
You could bring you stew. Yes.
Yeah, the old people do.
Yes. Well, in fact, when I had visited Burt's, one of the things I think they encourage folks to do is to try a bottle of this, a bottle of that, so that you can really get a good taste sampling of what you might like and discover some new things.
Absolutely. That's one of the best parts about our place, is that people come in and they can just, put together their own little selections, try something new, put together some favorites, expand their palate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's very exciting. People really enjoy it.
It is. It's a lot of fun. And all the different flavors and the things that now are blended as far as beer flavors, I mean, blueberry and chocolates and, I mean, any kind of fruit or berry gets blended in as a flavor.
In the last few years, it's become anything goes.
Mm-hmm.
If you can put it into the mash, it's going to go in there. We've seen everything from chili peppers, oysters.
Yes, oysters. I saw
yes.
that. I mean, what is that? I mean, do you really kind of taste? I mean,
some oyster stouts are actually made with oysters, and what that does is it gives it that nice little oyster meatiness flavor to it, and then a little mineral salt finish at the end, because they also put oyster shells into the brewing process.
Because when you taste this one, you said it has oatmeal in it.
That one has oatmeal.
You almost can, taste that rich kind of, oatmeal kind of taste, it's really good.
Very good. So we need to do some more sampling.
Okay, what I'm going to do now is I'm going to open up. This is from the 603 Brewing, and they're down in Londonderry, New Hampshire. They're one of the newest ones on the scene. This is also a can. A lot of cans coming out these days. This is their Amber Ale. Now, Amber Ale is, like we talked about, that top fermenting yeast.
Mm-hmm. That's one that ferments more quickly
than
okay.
I love how he does that.
I know, right? The good sound effects. And I also appreciate that you explained, because most people did learn to become can snobs and we're not going to drink anything out of the can. But you said things have changed quite a bit and it does not take on that tinny flavor.
No,
that used to make it a cheap taste in years ago.
And there are so many advantages to being in a can than in a bottle.
Like?
For one, that it doesn't get light struck. Everybody talks about skunking. Mm-hmm. And what skunking is that ultraviolet light has an adverse effect on certain molecules in the beer. And if it's out in the sun too long, it breaks apart those molecules, and one of those components is sulfur. And so you open it up, you put a Budweiser out in the sun for about 10 minutes and then sniff it, and you're going to have this huge sulfur aroma. And that's because the ultraviolet light's having an adverse effect on it. That's why you see brown bottles instead of clear bottles, because brown bottles block the ultraviolet light. Aluminum, though, blocks 100% of the light. Uh-huh. So you don't have to worry about being light struck. Cans are also 33% lighter than glass. So there's also, handling, transportation cost as far as that goes. Glass is an insulator. Metal is a conductor. Uh-huh. It gets colder in a can than it does in a bottle. You can also crush them, pack them in, and pack them out.
Right.
So becoming very, very popular amongst skiers, hikers, boaters, people going to pool parties, that kind of thing. I mean, we've got our can section is growing quite a bit, and we have a lot of people looking specifically for cans.
Interesting. Well, we are going to go on a short break. You're going to stick around with us because next when we come back, I want to talk with you about being a beer judge.
And, certainly.
I have a few questions for you. But you are listening to Food for Thought, 107.7 FM.
And use the writing.
We are in studio with Bert Bingle of Bert's Better Beers. And stay tuned. Food for Thought will be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
To Food for Thought with Carol, and joining me is Jeannie Lester. We are live at the Beacon Building, 814 Elm Street in downtown Manchester, and we are in studio with Bert Bingle of Bert's Better Beers, and we are getting a lesson in beer.
Absolutely. And mead and cider.
And mead, I never knew that.
No.
Lovely fermented beverages.
Yes. And now, what I was saying before the last, before the break, I'd like to, you had said you're a certified beer judge.
That's correct.
So what exactly does that mean? Like, how do you become a certified beer judge?
There's a program called the BJCP. That's Beer Judge Certification Program. And they are the sanctioned body for all homebrew competitions throughout the United States and pretty much on a global basis. And we're all professionals. We're highly trained. We go through a very rigorous certification program. Hardest exam I ever took in my life was the BJCP certification exam. It takes several years of preparation to be able to get it right and to be able to pass it. And we can go in and we can actually judge and rank beers. And what we do is that we go to competitions. Just like anything else, it's hobbyists want to be able to compete. So, there's beer competitions where hobbyists say, which one's better. But there's got to be some proper judging that's going on. So what we do as judges is that we follow a set of guidelines for each beer and each style. And we judge them and we rank them. And we determine, who the winner of the competition is. But more importantly, what we are doing is that we're offering the brewer constructive criticism or ideas on how to improve their beer. If there's, or particularly if there's something wrong with their beer, they want to know what it is. We can help them work out the problems with the brewing process. So, they're going to get some very good, solid feedback from people that don't just say, well, yeah, it's a good beer. No, we can tell you exactly why it's a good beer in a number of different ways, all the way down from the chemistry, the physics, the biochemistry. You know, it's a very rigorous process.
Now, so sort of like in the wine world, a sommelier.
Exactly.
Mm. Now, when you like poured my beer, you know, I kind of was looking at it kind of like it was a glass of wine.
Mm-hmm,
like,
sure.
Do you swirl it like that?
Absolutely. I mean, we do a lot of the same things. I mean, when we evaluate beer, we look at the appearance, the aroma, the flavor, the mouthfeel, and then the overall impression of the beer. And every one of them has, you know, specific things, even for every specific beer. On, you know, what you should be finding for aroma and flavor characteristics and that kind of thing. Yeah, and we rouse, you know, swirl around and that kind of thing.
Is there legs or no?
Absolutely. There's legs, lacing, all kinds of terms like
I
that.
I know my terms, Jeannie.
I'm so impressed. I'm in awe over here.
I didn't know that it pertained to beer, but see, apparently it does.
You're making that transition. I'm very impressed.
That is okay. That is cool.
So a lot of the same skills that you use for evaluating wine, you use for beer, just, you know, different ingredients.
I can't wait to do this with my boyfriend. I'm going to have a thing of beer, and I'm going to swirl it around with him. And
and he'll think, what are you doing? Now, Albert, as you, your tastes before you became a certified judge and after you became a certified judge, was there a change? Because before you're going in, this is just what I like. Then as you're trained to look for certain things, did it change what you liked as far as beer?
I think if anything, from becoming a beer judge, it exposed me to a lot of styles that I would not have tried myself. When you judge a competition, you're assigned a category. And the thing is like, whether you like the beer or not, the style, you need to judge it. So you need to be objective. Mm-hmm. You know, it might not be my favorite style, but I have to be able to judge it objectively. And I have found myself trying different beers that I probably wouldn't have tried myself. Like I wasn't into sour beers at all. Sour beers? What the heck is that? Sour beers.
Doesn't sound good to me either.
Absolutely delicious. Incredible sour beers. It's a huge category. There's a big demand for it. And yeah, they're sour, they're tart.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you have some at Burt's Better Beers,
I'm sure. Yes, we do. Not as many as I'd like to have, but sour beers are a huge category.
Interesting. Again, it's something, a new adventure for folks to be able to try.
Mm-hmm.
Now, can you tell people where you're located in Hooksett?
We're at 1100 Hooksett Road and in a plaza called Community Plaza. It's right off exit 9 North. The landmark is there's a Bank of America there and there's a butcher shop there.
Okay. Very good.
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to try some of the mead?
Let's move on now.
You're eyeballing the mead over here. Now, we talked about the meads. These are Moonlight Meads. Michael Fairbrother from Londonderry, New Hampshire, has been making these. He's been taking the mead world by storm. This is one of his first ones, Kurt's Apple Pie.
Ooh.
Apple Pie Mead.
No, this is technically, this is a subcategory of meads called a sizer. Now, a sizer is a combination of mead and cider.
Okay.
Oh!
Carol has not been shot, for anyone who is concerned. That was a beautiful noise.
Thank you.
Now, this, of course, is going to have some nice apple notes to it, the honey notes, and, of course, there's some pie spices in it. This is, for all intents and purposes, apple pie in a bottle.
Ah, okay. Mm-hmm.
Oh, my.
Oh, so you smell it, and it smells like apple cider.
Mm-hmm. Now, you can serve this a number of ways. You can serve it chilled, room temperature like we're having it, or you could heat it very slowly and serve it warm.
Right.
Drizzle it over ice cream.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Goes great with a cheese platter.
Very good. Yeah. Yes, because it has a very, as you said, it's a very strong, sweet
Ooh.
Flavor. So I could see it pairing well with those things. Either even, as you said, there are so many things you can do with ice cream. Who knew? Mm-hmm. But to drizzle that over ice cream or have that with something, the cheese that would kind of complement that and go back and
like
forth.
Like you said, it tastes like apple pie.
Yeah, doesn't it?
Oh, my goodness. And honey. I can't believe how much it tastes like apple pie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That is delicious.
It is. So for those of you who have not tried mead, this would be a good thing to experiment with. It is. It's a very sweet, apple-y, honey, different, but still light, like refreshing. There's no aftertaste that's going to kind of stay with you and be bitter. It's very nice.
You know, just like beers and just like any other wine, there's a wide palette of colors and flavors. Everything from cinnamon, hot peppers, chocolates.
Mm.
It's a very versatile beverage.
Very nice.
Very good. My gosh, we've learned so many more things today. Before we let you go, I do need to ask you, because I did go over your website, what is with the bag? There's something with the blue bag here, Burt's Better Beer bag.
Well, this is our bag. We give these to our customers, you know, it's a carry bag. And our bag is probably the best traveled bag in the world. I wish I had been as many places as a Burt's Better Beer bag. It all started off with one customer of ours who works at the South Pole and took a picture of the South Pole holding the bag.
Sent it to us.
Very cool. And people were like, okay, game on. I can do this. And it just started, people started just sending us pictures of they take their bag on vacation. And they take it here, and they take it there. We've got pictures of it with the pyramids, with camels. We just got one yesterday from the Great Wall of China.
Wow. That is so cool.
Yeah. It's just I have more pictures than I know what to do with. I have to figure out how to post all my pictures because I also, you know, post them in the shop as well. But from, you know, all over the place.
So, and listeners, so it's a royal blue bag that says Burt's Better Beers. And I have seen some of the pictures, and it is. Folks have taken them on these different journeys and then take a picture of the blue bag from Burt's at these exotic locales and then give you the pictures. Yeah. And some of them are in your shop and some of them are online. It's an amazing thing that, people love the challenge of that kind of a game.
We kind of do the same thing with our Moe and Dinah mugs at the diner. People have taken pictures of the diner on the Golden Gate Bridge and, you know, in the Bahamas. And so it's kind of the same idea. When I saw that, I was like, that is so cool. That is awesome. I'm going to Burt's Better Beers just to get a bag so I can take it with me on vacation.
Here's your bag.
There you go.
No, I'm going to go to Burt's
Better Beers. Okay.
You still need to go in.
Yeah. I'm going to go. I'm going to go with Daryl, and we're going to go and get some. I want to try that sour beer.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm very intrigued by that.
I have a beer that not only can you enjoy it with your salad, but use it as your salad dressing.
Oh my gosh. And what is that called?
It's called Monk's Cafe Flemish Sour Ale.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Oh my gosh. Well, Burt, thank you so much for coming on Food for Thought.
Well, thank you very much for having me today.
It's been a great experience, as usual. And all the different beer we tasted and the mead.
Mead, yes. Who knew?
I know. That is, it's so interesting. So, thank you very much, and we'll see you at some point again, I'm sure. And you are listening to Food for Thought. We're going to go on a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about sweet endings to end our week. So stay tuned. Food for Thought will be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Welcome back. Food for Thought with Carol, and joining me is Jeannie Lester. We're on 107.7 WTPL FM, and we are live at the Beacon Building in downtown Manchester. And wasn't it interesting with Burt?
It was very interesting because he knows so much about the history from years ago and all the variations. And then, to find out that he's a certified judge.
A certified beer judge.
Goodness
who
gracious.
Knew?
Yes. Who knew that existed, right?
I know.
And, but and it was interesting to hear him say that was one of the most rigorous tests he's been through.
Well, right. I mean, he said it took him like a couple of years to get prepared for that.
Yes.
I think that's amazing. I mean, just the knowledge that he has to have, you know, just to decipher between all these different kinds of beers. And, you know, when you go into any given place, like you just go to the tap house in Hooksett, which I'm sure he knows of the tap house, there is so many different beers on tap in there. And, you know, when you think about it, he needs to know what every single one is about.
Right.
And what
or should be about.
Or should be about.
Yeah. So that he can make that judge and that criteria. Absolutely.
And the mead. Yes. That is different, too.
That
when
was
he
very
was saying
different.
Meads, I was like, what is mead? Oh, my brother.
Yes.
It's interesting.
Mm-hmm. It is very interesting. It's a different taste. But when he explained it, that kind of helped me to know what to expect.
Exactly.
That it was fermented with honey and that it was going to be much sweeter. So,
yes.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yes. Big thank you for that information.
Our brain got much bigger this week.
It did. We're going to need the weekend to process all that we've learned.
We do.
Monday through Friday. Mm-hmm. And then we're back at it again on Monday.
Exactly.
And we do want to thank our sponsors also for making this possible, for helping us to learn so much. And we thank Express Jewelry Center at 44 North Main Street in Concord, Integrity Health Coaching Solutions at integrityfit.com, Red Arrow Diner in Manchester, Milford, and soon Londonderry, Belmont Hall at 718 Grove Street in Manchester, New England Coffee, the official coffee of Food for Thought, and Celeste Oliva at 75 South Main Street in Concord. And again, thank you to those sponsors. But yes, we have so much food for thought that's going to be fun to play with this weekend and try different things, experimenting in the kitchen. And that's a lot of what it's about, right?
It's just being
willing to adventure out and do something different.
That's right. And you know, in cooking with beer, you know, mm-hmm. cooking mm-hmm. with beer, cooking with wine. There's just an array of things that you can do.
Absolutely. It sounds non-threatening. Like you don't have to be a perfectionist and know exactly what it is you're doing to add a little
bit of that. You know,
the problem is then if it comes out great, how do you duplicate it?
That is the problem. You know, when I make soup, I never use a recipe. It's always just...
Never. Just whatever you have.
It's just, you know... I mean, I usually go to the grocery store to get my stuff for the soup or, you know, but, and when it's a really good soup, mm-hmm. like I'll always say, it's the best soup I ever made. And and all my friends, if June's listening right now, she's laughing because I always say, oh my gosh, you have to come, you have to try the best soup I ever made, or my family, they all, when I say that, but I can never duplicate it sometimes. When it is like really, really good, mm-hmm. I don't know how to duplicate it because I don't follow a recipe.
Right.
And I hardly ever follow recipes. And, you know, that's why I'm probably, that's why I could never be a baker. Because, you know, I think, you know, you have to be more precise. And baking to me is just too messy. I'm not a messy cook. I'm not. But
yeah, you have to be willing to get that. It is a messier process. To me, I like the security of having that recipe. But I need to concentrate. I don't want anyone distracting me because I will check and recheck those ingredients because the very first time I tried to make something as simple as sugar cookies, it needed a quarter of a teaspoon of salt.
And what'd you use?
A quarter of a cup of salt, of course.
Oh my God.
And I brought them proudly to my family and to my parents to show them what I had made. And I mean, my poor parents, what do you say to this, you know, 10-year-old kid who's bringing you what she thinks is this great prize? And, you know, oh, well, those are really, you know, good effort, but you may have, I mean, my mother was very gentle. Bless her. Thank you. So I didn't give up, but
that
I remembered the salt. Yeah. So ever since then, I've been very nervous about adding salt to things, but obviously you need it to enhance those flavors.
You do. Unfortunately, you do. But yes.
So, and speaking of some of those sweet, you know, cookies and baking and those kinds of things, that is my downfall. I of course enjoy a nice meal, but it's the sweets and the desserts that really get to me. And so as we end our week, you know, and we're coming in on the end of the show, we need to be thinking about sweet endings to the week and some good desserts that we have.
And I think you said do you have a recipe?
I have a very easy off the top of my head recipe that someone shared with me years ago. I have been making it since, and my family loves it. It gets requested to be brought to all kinds of functions. And at the time, the friend who told me about it called it Kahlua cake. And I thought that's what it was. Well, what it is really basically trifle, which I think everybody makes now.
Yeah, but there's all different variations
there
of trifle.
Sure. So the very easy way that I make it is you make just a basic chocolate sheet cake.
Yeah.
And you take about half of that, and you're going to crumble maybe a third of that half in the bottom of a trifle bowl. And then you take some Kahlua or coffee-flavored liqueur and drizzle that on top of the cake. And then you add some chocolate pudding on top of that, some Cool Whip that has more coffee-flavored liqueur blended in with that, Whoa. And then some Heath bar on top of that. And then you repeat that layering. And it's just an amazingly rich but simple dessert that everybody likes.
Right. That is very simple. And the chocolate cake, just a basic, I mean, box chocolate cake or
yes,
whatever.
Yes, I'm ashamed to say yes. No. Especially if you're in a hurry and this is something that you need to bring to, you know, any kind of a function. It's just an easy way to put that together and people love it.
I don't think that's anything to be ashamed of.
The problem is, though, you don't want to make it too far ahead of time because then the pudding and the Cool Whip is going to sog up that cake and it's a little too mushy.
You could make, like, the chocolate cake ahead of time.
Yes.
And the pudding ahead of time.
Sure.
And
just assemble it.
Right.
And assemble shortly
it
before you
right.
go.
Exactly. But, yeah. Well, you know, we were talking about sweet endings, and have you ever had the... And what came to my mind first when I heard, you know, sweet endings, this came to my mind. Have you ever had the chocolate bag at the Bedford Village Inn?
No, but it sounds like something I should have.
It's called the chocolate bag. Now, it literally, when you order it, it'll come on a plate, and it's like a small, but it's a good size. I mean, it's probably about yay long, which is what, like 4 or 5 inches long? Five or 6 inches long, really. And it looks like a bag.
Okay.
Lying on its side. Actually, no, I think it's standing up when they first bring it.
I can see that wasn't an important detail for you.
I'm not sure if it was standing up or laying down. But
or maybe it started standing up, and as you started to dive in, it kind of caved.
I think it comes laying down. But anyway, it's like tilted a little bit or something. But the whole bag is made out of chocolate, and it's hollowed out.
Yeah.
And it is filled with all kinds of fruits. It's a white and dark chocolate mousses inside.
Oh. Yeah.
With assorted berries and Chambord sponge cake all inside, drizzled on the outside. It's to die for.
That
it's
sounds
really,
amazing.
Really good. Yes.
Amazing. So now I think you are not a big sweets person, but there are some times that you really enjoy something that hits you just right.
I do. Yeah. I do. Lately this week, no, I haven't. But before that, I don't know, I was like in this sweet mode and I don't know what the heck was going on, but I normally am not like a, you know, into sweets, but I had been. Mm-hmm. Now I'm trying to stop.
Okay, and you have done a fantastic job from what I have seen this week, and it seems like you're feeling better.
I am.
Maybe more energy.
Yes, that is for sure. And, you know, Daryl's working late tonight, which I'm kind of, well, not happy about that he's working late, but, you know, there's no plan, so... You know, it's good. I can, you know, stay on my routine. And, you know, that's what I need, the routine, you know.
Absolutely. So. Yep, it's those habits that you build in that are going to be second nature and makes it very easy to follow.
Exactly.
All right, so I have a question. We're coming up on the weekend, and it's a time that a lot of people tend to make a breakfast because you can't really do that during the week, or I can't. Most people are running out the door, right. And they're doing something like the smoothies that we talked about, that you're just throwing some good things in a blender and grabbing as you go out the door. On the weekends, some folks have the luxury of a little more time in the morning. When you have that kind of time in the morning, is there a go-to breakfast that it really is just indulgent for you or, okay, this means it's the weekend and I'm enjoying making this?
You're asking me that question?
I'm asking you, Carol.
You know what? Actually, we do probably the opposite of that because we will, you know, we'll sleep in a little bit and we'll go out to breakfast.
Ah, okay.
That's
which
usually
is always fun.
What we'll do.
Yes.
We'll usually go out to breakfast. And we try to go to a different place each weekend just to try,
different places. Yeah. Okay. See, for me, when I have the time, I am a big waffle person. And there's nothing like making a nice thick waffle that's golden and crisp on the outside with real maple syrup. Mm-hmm. And I have tried, I mean, there's part of me that likes the strawberry syrup and whipped cream and all those things that you can do, but there's nothing like the taste of just a simple waffle with butter and maple syrup, real stuff.
That's
some bacon in there. You've got a good breakfast.
Well, Daryl is a bacon fanatic. So actually, last week on the snowstorm, was it last week or maybe the week before snowstorm? When it wasn't the week of the show, so it was last week. and Tuesday. Wasn't everything closed down that
yes,
day or
yes,
something?
Yes.
Everything was closed down. So we were home. He wasn't working, and we were home. And he made crepes.
Oh.
So we made crepes.
That's impressive. Do you have the – this is going to our appliance conversation. Do you have the crepe maker, or does he make it in a pan?
In a frying pan.
Good. Yep. Even yep. more impressive.
Yep.
Because I think as we evolve our conversation about useless gadgets, that may fall into that category, a crepe maker, because how often are you going to use that? Maybe twice a year. If there's someone who uses a crepe maker more than that, I would love to hear from them.
Exactly. But, you know, we do make crepes. We make crepes pretty often, actually, mm-hmm. now that I'm thinking about it. He loves crepes. So.
And do you usually do the fruit and the sweet side, or is mm-hmm. it a savory? Do you add chicken and those kinds of things?
Just crepes with syrup. Although, you know what I like on mine?
What's that?
I like Karo syrup.
Really?
Yes.
Karo syrup,
clear,
you make things with, though.
Clear Karo syrup.
Okay.
It is delicious.
Really?
Try it sometimes.
Okay. I'll have to try it just
try it
to
on
see
your waffle.
What it is.
Yeah. Try it on your waffle.
Okay.
Tell you, it's delicious.
Maybe in a pinch. I'll try that on one of those tiny little squares.
A little square. Telling you.
We'll do that.
Well, we made the week.
And it was a fun week.
It was a great week. It was a great learning experience also. And you know what? I want to just thank Bob behind the scenes for putting all of this together for us. And, you know, so, yes, stay tuned, listeners, for next week. We have another great week in store for you. And we'll see everybody next week. Bye-bye.